Welcome to the All In for Citrus podcast, the latest on citrus research from the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences statewide citrus team in partnership with Southeast AgNet Radio Network.
Welcome to the All In for Citrus podcast. I'm your host, Frank Giles with AgNet Media. And as always, I'm joined by Michael Rogers, the director of the Citrus Research and Education Center in Lake Alfred, Florida. Michael, welcome.
All right. Thank you, Frank.
Well, it's kind of a busy time of year. We're here in the spring. We've had quite a few citrus events recently, and we thought we'd just kind of chat through some of those, one being the Florida Citrus Show, which we here at AgNet Media host in partnership with the University of Florida and USDA. We moved the event last year and started a new format, and now the event is held at the neighboring facilities of the University of Florida's Indian River Research and Education Center and the USDA Horticultural Lab in Fort Pierce. We set it up sort of as a tailgate style. The vendors set up, it kind of reminds you of a football game tailgate, and the attendees get treated to food. A lot of the vendors get in on the act and serve food out of their tents and the back of their pickups. And it's really been a popular format to kind of freshen up that event. We've had citrus seminars over in the University of Florida building, and we've added vegetable programming over in the USDA facility. But this new approach is kind of, I think, given that event a little bit of a breath of fresh air. And we had a great turnout there in the 1st of April in Fort Pierce. It was well attended. And, you know, that's heartening, especially to see the citrus growers there. We're still struggling with this HLB plague, but the growers are showing up and eager to share their experiences and learn from one another and learn about the research that's going on. So that was encouraging. Michael, I know you weren't there, but I believe you were there last year. What did you think of that new format of the show?
I think everybody enjoyed it. It's a good chance for people to interact more. I've heard positive things. I had a conflict that day, so I missed it this year, but I heard good feedback from everybody who was there. So I think that is something in those shows that keeps on going, that everybody's, you know, excited about being there every year. I know we have really jam-packed springs with all these meetings that are going on, but it really hasn't seemed to dampen the attendance at all, because all of our meetings we've been holding, even those that are pretty close to each other, we still are having really good attendance, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and we're trying to develop the program to hit on a lot of topics quickly. At the citrus show, we had a couple panels during the seminars for citrus, which those were given a little bit more time to breathe. The citrus breeders from UF and USDA gave a great talk on some of the varieties and rootstocks that they're developing. And also, we capped it off with a grower panel just talking about some of the things that they're doing in groves to try to keep these groves as productive as possible, despite HLB. But the talks in between, we kept them kind of short, 10 minutes, kind of quick hits. I know that's been a learning curve for some of the researchers who really want to dive deep into their research, and rightly so. But keeping them in those little quick hit formats, we got to cover a lot of ground. So I think that's beneficial for the growers, because they can kind of pick out the high points. And if they want to dig deeper, they can circle back with the researchers after the show. So we've been kind of happy with that format recently.
Yeah, no, it's good, because, you know, even my attention span sitting in a seminar, after 10 minutes, you start kind of losing it a little bit. Frank, I also want to mention one thing, just in case people haven't heard a little bit of news out of the Fort Pierce Indian River Research and Education Center. They have named a new center director for that station. It'll be effective June the 17th. They're bringing in Mark Kistler, who is currently the professor and dean of the School of Agricultural and Natural Resources at ABAC, or Abraham Baldwin Ag College, up in Tifton. So, and he's a long time original Floridian. I think he grew up in Winter Haven, if I remember correctly. But he's coming back to Florida, and so we're glad to see him coming in to lead that station as they move forward with all their research plans and things going forward for the future. So again, Mark Kistler will begin June the 17th there in Fort Pierce as the IRREC's center director.
Great. That was breaking some news here on the podcast today. That was news to me. So familiar with ABAC. My dad actually went to school there. So anyway, you know, another event on the heels of the Citrus Show was the Citrus Institute. Michael, I know you spoke there in the morning and gave some updates on some of the research activities that are going on. So you want to just tell us a little bit about some of the highlights that came out of that event.
Yeah, well, I think it was a good mix of talks. Of course, probably the ones that are of most interest to folks, we heard a little bit about an update from Dr. Uta Albrecht on OTC injections. And as I think everybody expects, you know, she continues to see some promising data in her trials in terms of yield increase, possibly some Brix increase. You know, they're still looking at how much fruit quality is really impacted. But it's really probably more just an overall tree health as they're managing the bacterial levels and seeing the results that do manifest itself in terms of more leaf growth and how that affects fruit quality down the road. But she gave us some more tips to growers, you know, based on what she's finding. There's been a lot of discussion about where you inject in the tree, you know, scion versus rootstock, things like that. And there's really no difference. You know, it's all about trying to get lower to the ground, but not too close so you don't end up with things like Phytophthora splashing into those drill holes. But the farther away from the crotch of the tree, she's showing, you know, the better distribution throughout the tree. And she, that's nothing new to growers because she's been explaining that for as long as she's been talking about this work. But again, and I also think, you know, she's shown that, or maybe she didn't show, but she discussed that she has tested the two different commercial products that are out there, the OTC products, and they perform in her trials, they perform equal to each other. And so I think that's interesting for growers to know that because they're always looking at, you know, questions about what's the best approach, what's the best product. And here we've got two products that seem to perform equally in the field.
Great. And you talked a little bit about research priorities and all. Just give us a brief recap of some of the things that you spoke about.
Yeah. So I mentioned early on in my talk about some of the research going on at IFAS about what I would call, again, more long-term projects. You know, our top priority, I think, for IFAS and where we've really invested a lot of money is in our developing new varieties that are going to be resistant. Well, maybe tolerant. I'd love to say resistant because that's our ultimate goal. If we can get a resistant variety to HLB, fantastic. It may just be tolerance. But new variety development, we're looking at, you know, obviously we've invested in several different directions to develop new varieties. One of those is conventional breeding. We have a breeding program. A lot of material has come out of that program in more recent years. And as growers are well aware, a lot of it's been through that fast track program that we've had. So it comes out, we don't have a lot of data. They're mostly small plot data, not a lot of replicated data on some of these new varieties. But our response to the grower demand to get it out sooner rather than later, we'll evaluate it kind of stuff has happened. And so we really we want to get more and more data, though, replicated data on those varieties that we release through Fast Track. So we have established a couple of new plantings in the state. IFAS invested money in that so we can start have much larger replicated trials beyond what we've got, also already ongoing. Again, trying to evaluate some of the newest material that we have, and we'll continue to be doing that well into the future. So that's evaluating some of the stuff that's more near-term for growers in the breeding program. But I think everybody's aware that IFAS has also invested quite a bit of money, you know, several million dollars into more genetic approaches, more molecular techniques, gene editing, transgenics, those approaches for developing new disease-resistant varieties. So one of those has to do with gene editing, I mentioned. There's lots of different work using the gene editing CRISPR tool. But really, the only person in IFAS right now that's doing it that's truly a non-transgenic is Dr. Nian Wong. We've invested a lot of money doubling his lab space, giving him a lot more resources, not necessarily to make the work go faster, because you can't speed up biology on these plants, but he's going to be able to do a lot more at one time. You know, it's a numbers game. So if you're looking for a needle in the haystack, now you got more people looking, if you will. So we're very hopeful about some of the stuff he's got coming. You know, we're just going to, you know, we're just going to have to stay tuned and see how this goes. Some of his first plants are going to the field. If they're not already in the field, it's happening this spring. We've got those sites set up. And he's really got this pipeline set up now where probably every spring we're going to be moving more and more plants to the field to evaluate some of these gene-edited non-transgenic varieties. There's also a lot of work, a lot more plants that are transgenics, whether they were developed using CRISPR technology or other techniques. And at IFAS, we've established another field site where we can expand and test more transgenics. And it's not just IFAS plant material coming out of IFAS. We're looking at stuff from other universities in the Northeast or across the different parts of the country. And it really gives us a chance not only to look at our stuff, but also have everybody's transgenics in one location. And it allows you some comparisons because we just want to see what's going to work. We don't care where it comes from, who's got it, who developed it. Let's just find out what works best and try to move that through the regulation process to make it available to growers. And so that's what we're doing. And also, again, to try to speed that up or to get more of those transgenic varieties in the pipeline for evaluation. IFAS, again, that you know we've established that Plant Transformation Center in Gainesville. And so Charlie Messina is heading that, and he's doing a lot of work to try to get that up and going as quickly as possible and start getting some material in the pipeline so we can move it to the field as quickly as possible for evaluation. So those are kind of long-term. That's not, I think most people probably heard us talk about that in the past, but just wanted to keep that at the front of everybody's mind is that that is happening. We're working on that. But as far as some additional new projects, a lot of what we're looking at is going to be some of the things that growers can use right now, trying to utilize tools that we have in place. How do we fine tune the use of tools? I feel like a broken record. I'm always talking about, you know, nutrition and irrigation. I mean, those are so important for our growers. And we've got some groves that have been doing some, definitely a Cadillac or maybe it's a Bentley program. It's extremely expensive fertilization programs using controlled release fertilizers. Adds a lot of cost, but it works. And our trees respond and look fantastic. But the program that we're doing is not economical for growers. So we're trying to break that down right now and figure out what macro and micronutrients are most important to have slow release coated or controlled released, and then supplement the rest of that mix with some cheaper fertilizer sources so we can make it affordable. And so that's a project that just started this spring, trying to break that down. And so we can provide something that's a lot more economical for growers to use. And I think that's going to be important because you can do it with these fertilizers. You can keep these trees in good health, but it costs a lot more than growers are willing to spend right now to do that. And we've also got some work going on, you know, with irrigation. And back up, there was one of the talks that happened at Institute was from Dr. Tripti Vashish. And she showed some really interesting data on irrigation studies. And in my talk, I relayed how we'd seen some examples in India where they were using, you know, they had fine-tuned their irrigation or their water management and also nutrient management and producing outstanding amounts of fruit and keeping the industry going that where they've had HLB for a century. We talked about that in a past podcast. Well, Dr. Vashish showed some data from her studies with irrigation where they were going in irrigating every day, and it was not just once a day. They were actually, it was kind of a proof of concept study where they were irrigating three times a day for 20 minutes, not letting the root systems dry down. And this was every day. That's not necessarily practical for growers, but they weren't, but she's again just trying to prove that if you can keep the water to the trees, you can, irrigation can play a huge role in keeping the fruit from dropping, especially during the time of year we're in right now and in, you know, these dry months where water is very critical for what's going to happen on your crop in the future. And again, she's not using more water. Say, if you look at the course of a week, she's not using more water. It's the same quantity. It's just lower volumes more frequently. And in the first year of her study, and this was a study, a two-year study, the first year she saw yields increase, I think it was about 70%. Where she was increasing the irrigation. But like with all treatments, whether, you know, it's fertilizer, irrigation, or probably even OTC, I would imagine, it takes time for those benefits to really be seen. And by year two, her yields had increased 200%, where they were doing the every day, three times a day irrigation. So we're going to continue working in this area, looking at irrigation. One of the things I think we know, people can't necessarily go out and do three times a day irrigation unless you've got controllers set up that you can do that. But we're looking at ways to, now that we've shown that it has a big impact. So realistically, what's the minimum we can get away with and see those same results? But I think the bottom line for growers right now is it really comes down to, at this dry time of the year, keep the water on those trees, not necessarily more, but just as frequent and low dose as you can do, just to make sure that you keep that crop on the tree that we're setting right now. Because this is the time of the year that really determines what's going to happen at harvest later on the season.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the day after the Citrus Institute, we were over again for another meeting, and Citrus Mutual had hosted a grower roundtable, which you and I attended, and that was a fascinating conversation between growers about the trunk injection therapies and how they're doing it. Everybody has a little bit different approach, and they're getting their arms around that and learning better ways to just the workflow of treating these trees. But I think one thing we're hearing at that meeting and other meetings is that the expectations were so high with the trunk injection therapies that I think growers were hoping maybe for a little bit more dramatic results in the first year treatment. Second treatments are going out now. But I think they all, most certainly at that presentation, said it's been a net positive, but you know, we've got a ways to go yet. And I think it emphasizes what you were just talking about is these trunk injection therapies are going to be kind of foundational going forward for a lot of growers in terms of how they manage HLB, but all the other things that were important before are going to be just as important today as they were yesterday. That's irrigation, nutrition, everything that makes a good citrus production program is going to be just as important as they ever were.
Yeah, I think so. And Dr. Albrecht talked a lot about, you know, the variability. And I think even her presentation, if you remember, I don't remember exactly, there was a slide towards the end where she mentioned something, a quote from some researcher about each tree's like a different unit or everything, every tree's different.
Yeah, it's like its own proof of concept or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I'd written that down because it was a good point that she made. And I think it really, and I think that's why when you look back, you know, trunk injections are not new. They've been tried repeatedly since the 1970s. And I think one of the reasons they've not caught on has to do with there's a lot of inconsistencies in results. And phytotox is the second one. And I think Uda's point, and I think growers, they pointed this out in the roundtable. Well, Uda especially was talking about, you know, what are optimal conditions? She got asked, what are the optimal conditions to be doing these trunk injections? And anything we do in citrus production, in citrus management of pests or anything, there's always an optimal time. But we recognize that growers are never going to be able to, when you have a large operation, you can't always hit the optimal time. The optimal time is when can you be in the field? When's it not pouring rain or storming or something else happening? So it's likely that, you know, there's plenty of times when people are in the field with these OTCs injections and they're doing them at the optimal time. But the window passes, they have to continue going because you don't get to stop just because you've reached a certain point in the day when, you know, you've passed the optimal time. You have to keep going if you want to get this job done. So I think that's one of the things that I think she was pointing out is that, you know, even with those issues, there are probably some things that you can do to try to make your grove a little more optimal. And one of the things that Udo talked about was moisture, and that you want to be doing this when the trees are transpiring, so making sure they're well watered. We've talked about irrigation already today, but again, that's something that'll help the success, whether it's nutrient uptake, OTC uptake, whatever. You want those plants to be well watered, and probably not doing it, you know, injections during the dry season. I think she talked a little bit about that. And on our website, we've updated some of the. There's a sheet that it is some guidelines, best use guidelines for OTC injections. And based on Uda's work this past year, she has updated that, looking at kind of I think the main update this year was the window, the optimal, as far as months of the year that it's best to be injecting. So that is online on the CREC website under some of our extension materials. And, you know, coming up, we've got Expo not too far in the future. It may seem far, but it's not, it'll be here before we know it. We'll have all that handout and a lot of other things, updated materials at Expo for growers to pick up as well. So if they weren't able to attend Institute and get a copy of that, we'll be having those at all the meetings and especially Expo coming up this fall.
That's right. That's right. The Citrus and Specialty Crop Expo, August 2021. So mark your calendars. We're already in the planning stages of that. And then we'll be having the event again this year at the State Fairgrounds in Tampa. So we'll look forward to seeing everyone there and putting on another great show, great event. And Michael, thank you for joining us, and we'll catch up again next month.
All right. Thanks, Frank.
Joining us now, we have Dr. Tripti Vasheath. She is based at the Citrus Research and Education Center in Lake Alfred. Welcome, Tripti.
Thank you.
Well, we had Dr. Michael Rogers on earlier, and he was talking about some of your irrigation research and the idea of frequency and lower doses. And I know you spoke about that recently at the Citrus Institute. And so we thought we'd have you on today to just talk a little bit about that research project and how it was broken down and some of the things that you were looking for.
Sure. So the idea behind this project was that we know HLB affected trees have smaller root mass, so which limits their water uptake and nutrient uptake. So if you apply the same amount of water to a healthy tree and HLB tree just cannot take up all of that water and most of it gets lost. And then tree would experience more water deficit because it's just not able to take up the water at a given time. So the idea was that if we enhance the frequency to, so generally like growers, most of the growers irrigate every other day, and we just wanted to see if we enhance the frequency, would we be able to make a difference? So we are not applying more water, we are trying to apply more frequently. So that was the main goal, and we did see over time that as we increased the frequency of water, we saw multiple effects. The trees were not experiencing as much water deficit. We could see that by different measurements where we measure the water deficit in the tree. We also saw more synchronized flowering, more fruit set, more number of fruit were harvested over 2 years. I believe on an average, it was about 150% more fruit from frequent irrigation.
Very good. So this was kind of a truth of concept idea, right? Just sort of saying, if you do this, these might be the expected returns.
Yes, it was a proof of concept. In this particular study, we were irrigating 3 times a day, which, I mean, it proves that if you can irrigate 3 times a day, you could get higher returns because you're able to maintain a water status in the tree. So the tree is just not experiencing water deficit. Because once the tree starts experiencing water deficit, you know, the photosynthesis goes down, all the, you know, there's an array of effects. So, yeah, if you can irrigate more frequently, you can expect better returns.
Right. And then that 3 times a day and the length of the irrigation again?
So our regular grower standard was 12 gallons per hour irrigated every other day for 2 hours. And in the higher frequency, we were irrigating 3 times a day every day. And each run was for 20 minutes. So again, the trees were getting the same amount of water in both conditions. Just the frequency was different.
Gotcha. And, you know, over time with these shorter duration and more frequent irrigation, could you expect to maybe improve the root mass under these trees? Of course, that in combination with a good nutrition program.
I do. So we did see improvement in the canopy density and canopy volume of the tree. And anytime you are making an improvement in the canopy, the change in the root would happen too. We did not measure the root mass, but I do expect that would be, it's a cyclic thing.
Yes, that would make sense. You know, there's some growers that have the technology and irrigation control panels that can do these short, more frequent applications, but those that do not, that have some of the older methods of irrigation, what would you advise to them in terms of how they manage their irrigation to try to best replicate that short, more frequent duration?
I would highly recommend that they try to at least irrigate every day. If they cannot do multiple times a day, irrigate every day. With HLB trees, we cannot stand to have another stress on the tree. Also try to irrigate every day during the dry part of the year. So like from February through May when the rainfall is not as much because most of the fruit will flowering and then fruit set and early fruit growth is happening right now. And we are pretty much at this time, we almost said what would happen to these fruit. If these fruit will remain weak and not grow as much, we know they are very likely to drop and would have poor quality.
Yeah, and that's fruit drop is what we've been fighting so much lately. And that moves us on to another topic. You've been leading the research and the use of PGRs to improve fruit retention. Now that the majority of growers are using trunk injection therapy, are you looking at how PGRs and OTC might complement each other?
Yes, so we have started some research now where we are looking into if we use PGRs on top of OTC, would we enhance the, like there will be a synergistic effect. And so that's something going on. And I would recommend our growers that we are still collecting the data on that. And it's only 1 year right now. But use of PGRs definitely improves your yield and your fruit retention. We know without OTC too, and I do expect to see even with OTC, it will still have that benefit. I'm saying if fruit drop is a problem, I do recommend using PGRs to reduce fruit drop. And overall, using gibberellic acid, cytokinins can also improve your canopy growth on top of like what you would expect from OTC. I believe you would have less effect.
Great. So those products can complement each other. Well, that's a great conversation, Tripti. We appreciate you joining us for the podcast today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this month's All In for Citrus podcast from the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences statewide citrus team in partnership with Southeast AgNet Radio Network.